Welcome back to Indie Can Radio, your front row seat and backstage pass to Canada's great emerging music. We are talking with Dan Hill, Juno winner, Grammy winner, and author. I Am My Father's Son. Great book. We're going to be talking to him a little bit about writing. Vancouver, the Olympics have left town. You must feel like last week's groupie. Everyone's gone and forgotten about you. We have an Indie Can Loves You. We got a couple of bands to kick off the show from Vancouver. We're starting with Dan Mangan. Dan, you ready?
I don't know what you've been told, but I don't get out much these days. Waking young and feeling old, the days are no longer my own. To piss away the waking hours. But don't let them go. Don't let them go. Still can ring and sing your stupid head off to the ones who are not listening. But don't let them go. Don't let them go. To be loved by you, they want to be loved by you, they want to be loved by robots. Need love too, they want to be loved by you, they want to be loved by you.
And we're listening to Indie Can Radio.
Let's in the backyard for hours.
Pawnshop Diamond from Vancouver. They are leaving the after party of the 2010 Winter Olympics to head out east. Say What is going to be their Toronto location, which is a great place to see good music. It always sounds great there. And it's a great atmosphere. It's on Front Street near church. So anyway, IndieCan.com if you want a hyperlink to their site and find out more about that tour. Maybe there's another place where you can see them too. We've got a diamond theme going on, I suppose, and an East meets West sort of thing. Pawnshop Diamond, of course, from Vancouver. We have Matthew Hornell and the Diamond Mines, which is a great play on words. I love that band name. They're from Newfoundland. Newfoundland, of course, is getting ready for the 2010 Juno Awards. That's going to be a party and a great place to party. We got a lot going on. We're going to the Mod Club later. Bazia Lijic will get some of her tunes on. And Patrizia were part of a show hosted by Scott Penfold. And we're going to talk again to Patrizia about a slight change in direction she's going with her operatic rock. Very soon, in fact, after this next song, we're going to part of the Dan Hill interview. I say part. I went to talk to him for 10 minutes about his book. We talked for about 40, so I'm going to give you about 10 minutes of that this week, and then next week maybe another 10 minutes or so. He was very generous with his time. The man is a Juno Award winner for his life as a pop star in the 70s. He is a Grammy Award winner for his life as a songwriter and collaborator and author. My Father's Son chronicles his life, his father's life. He just recently lost his father. He lived in the shadows of a great man who was his father, who was Ontario's first human rights commissioner. So that was a great book, and I'll tease you with some of the contents of that in the next little segment. But first, I'm going to introduce you to a Toronto band called The Cheap Speakers. I'm picking this song because I really love the rhyme sequence in it. Very clever.
Down and
you come across as someone who feels confident as a songwriter.
Well, that's true. I mean, I think because I've written songs for so long, you know, that it just comes from doing it since I was 14. So that being said, whenever I write a song, you know, I'm just doing everything I can to make it as good as I can, and I go through a lot of rewrites, and I'm usually writing with a lot of writers that have had more hits than I've had. You know, they're chock full of writers my age in Nashville that have had 20, 30, 40 hits.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm confident, but at the same time, I'm always curious to make it better and anxious to see, to learn stuff. You know, I'm always learning. You know, yeah, you never want to stop in any facet of your life at any age. The curiosity has to always be there.
Now, that said, do those skills and does that confidence translate at all when you come to writing a book?
Well, I'm not as confident as a prose writer. There's absolutely not, simply because I haven't done it all my life. I certainly had a gift for prose writing as a youngster, and I was getting articles published. And I had to make a decision, I felt, as a teenager, to make a choice that I felt that it was a world of specialization, and if you wanted to have a chance at having international success, you know, it's sort of like you can't be a 100-meter sprinter and a marathoner.
Yeah, right?
You have to choose.
Yeah.
And so I felt that I had to choose, and I chose music. And so then when I started writing this book after my father died, which was partly because he died and I missed him so much that I needed to fill the void of losing him with the pages in this book, I wasn't as confident, but the great thing was that the more I wrote, the easier it got, and the more confident I became, and the more the words, especially since it took 3.5 years, I could feel the growth of my prose writing over that time.
The chapters sort of read like songs, like they're individual stories.
Well, that's really insightful because, you know, I think one of the things I was thinking of as I was writing is I've been trained to always be aware. Now it's unconscious. I'm not even aware, thinking of it, but of keeping the listener's attention.
Yeah.
You know, when you're writing a song, you know, when you're telling a story, even if we're sitting around telling a story,
yeah,
there's that mechanism, like, how do I keep your attention?
Right.
You know, what do I have to do? You know, and so that's been sort of indelibly imprinted into my brain, that even as I was writing the book, there was an unconscious part of me that always knew I had to not lose the reader, that I had to keep their attention.
And it also reads like a Quentin Tarantino movie, like it's not chronological.
No, I wanted to. I've always enjoyed structural games. You know, again, songwriting is all about structure. You know, when to modulate, when to cut out a verse, when to go to the bridge. Do you go to a verse after the bridge? You know, structure is so important in a 3-minute song for a hit. You cannot make any mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, you can make a mistake in a great 800-page book, and the reader will stay with you if it's a great story and you really write well.
Mm-hmm.
Not so with a 3-minute song. You cannot blow it one time. And I thought the idea of the parallel lives of my father as a child and me as a child going back and forth would be fascinating, because my belief is that really nothing really changes, that every generation sort of thinks that they're the first generation to feel all these things, to
right.
feel angst,
yeah.
to feel rebellion, to feel alienation, to feel like they can change the world. And as I dug into my father's life and his father's life, I realized that we were all the same, you know,
yeah.
that we all feel these longings to have our parents' approval, this fear that we won't live up to our parents' expectation, that we won't be able to slide into their footsteps. And in a way, that was a very beautiful discovery for me, to realize that we're all really the same.
You've got all of these chapters of your life that you can look back now because you've put them down on paper. What would you alter or change if you had a second chance?
Well, I'm not one of those people that really believes in that. You know, they say that, I think it was David Gilmour said this during a book reading I did with him, that pain is the greatest informer,
mm-hmm.
that you learn from your mistakes. And I'm not saying I'm a successful person, but the most successful people make the most mistakes. The guys mm-hmm. that are hitting the most home runs strike out the most. I've made a lot of mistakes. But, you know, on the heel of those mistakes, you know, I learned some very valuable life lessons, and I tried not to make the same mistakes twice. So, to be honest, there's nothing I can really say that I changed, which isn't to say that I don't think I've led a perfect life. I've made a lot of mistakes, and I'm a very flawed guy, you know. But it's all part of the human experience, and it's I would rather kind of look at the now and try to become better at who I am and at what I do and how I relate to people, rather than look back at stuff that I've done that I can't change. You know, right. To me, that's a, you know, if you've ever been to an AA meeting, which I've been to, accompanying a friend, because I've never, you know, ostensibly been an alcoholic, that's one of the first things they say, is you can't change yesterday. You know, don't beat yourself up over what you've already done. It's about the now.
Just to take one situation in your life where you were sort of ambushed by the three Bernies, mm-hmm. and sort of
yes.
were in a situation with, you know, your devotion to the Macaulays, Matt and his family, mm-hmm. and they seem to be the voice of reason. Like, what would you do differently now? Like, just knowing what you know, like, faced with that situation,
well, I would have stayed with the Macaulays.
Yeah. You
know, I wouldn't have broken my contract.
Yeah.
You know, but then 55 is a lot different than 24.
Yeah.
Know? And at 24, I was obsessed with success, and I was also more easily manipulated and intimidated.
Yeah.
You know, by people that I thought were in power. Mm-hmm. So all that being said, I was a grown man, and I stand by my decisions as my own decisions, and I don't blame anybody but myself.
Yeah, you took complete responsibility of yourself.
But sure, that's a very good question. If I was in that situation again now, I believe loyalty is one of the most important and most underrated qualities. You know, that's one great thing that my dad showed us, is that despite the various issues my mom had with her mental health, her mental emotional health, you know, he may have been tough in a lot of ways, but he was unbelievably loyal.
Right.
You know, he never ever, you know, when my mom was sick in the hospital, every day he would go see her after work. Mm-hmm. You know, he would come home, braid my sister's hair, make sure that my brother and I had done our homework and had cooked the dinner. And then he would go to the hospital with flowers, with chocolates, with letters. You know, that was the way a man was supposed to be. He didn't say this is the way a man behaves, but we learn from example that you do not, you know, you do not run from adversity. If the woman that you love is in trouble, you don't suddenly say, oh, well, there's a better one over here. You stand by your woman, you know, to take that country song and turn it on its heels. You stand by your family. And so the same goes with loyalty with people in the business. Now, the people that I work with, I really, really love. I only work with people that I really, really connect with. And I love my creative friends. I feel really, really privileged to work with them. And I think one of the greatest parts of my life has been that my success as a songwriter or singer has opened this world where I've worked with and lived with these fascinating, brilliant people. I mean, I've been working with brilliant people since 1975, and what a great experience to be sitting across from Donna Summer like this.
Yeah.
And she just starts singing.
Yeah.
You know, there's when a person can really sing, like George Benson or Donna Summer, George Benson, they actually sing better than you realize on a record. Obviously, there's the other case, too, where people sound good on record and they don't sound good live, but the real singers sound better. When you're right in the room with them and you're hearing them in full three dimension without a mic, without any processing, it's absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And so there was a part of me, if I was hanging out with Tina Turner or, you know, working with Celine Dion, you know, or working with Keith Stegall, who's probably written more hit songs in country than anybody in the world, that I just feel unbelievably fortunate. I still can't believe that they would include me in their world. I always think that's because I'm a good storyteller. You know, that I make them laugh, so that's why they hang out with me. You know, I still can't believe it's because of my talent.
Now, let's just look at that situation, because that probably was one of those turning points in the book where you could have had your cake and eat it too. You were presented with an all-or-nothing proposition, which didn't have to be that way, and you didn't have the experience or knowledge or training to even prepare yourself for so many of these, you know, conflicts that you came up with in the music business. Should there be more transparency in the music business? If I want to sell you mutual funds, I've got to make all these disclosures to you, and you've got to sign all these waivers, and you've got to understand the risk you're taking. Even when you buy a lottery ticket, it gives you the odds in the back.
Sure.
You know, just putting on your sage hat for a moment, and looking back over your career and all the other people who the music business didn't turn out to be what they thought it would be. Mm-hmm. Should there or could there be more transparency in people entering the music business?
Yes. Yeah, I think there should be. I kind of think of the music business as sort of a frontier society. I kind of think of it as the way we would imagine the Wild West, mm-hmm. you know, where everyone kind of goes by their own rules,
right.
you know, and lives off their wits. You know, it isn't, you know, there are a lot of systemic problems in the music business when it comes to the business of music. And from my experience, it's a very, very difficult business and very, very easy to get ripped off.
Yeah.
And there definitely should be more transparency. It's unlike any other facet of the entertainment business in terms of there is more transparency in all the other entertainment factions. Like the book business is totally different than the music business.
Right.
As is the movie business.
Yeah.
Artists usually start, you know, having a traction in the music business when they're young.
Yeah.
And when you're young, you're not really thinking about money.
Right.
Whereas authors, my brother, for example, he didn't really hit it out of the park till he was like 50.
Yeah.
And so when you're 50, you know, you're a lot more careful about the contracts you sign than when you're like 18. Right? I mean, John Lennon, when he was 17, he wrote a letter to his friend saying, "It's too late for me. I'm too old."
You also tell a similar story about your very first co-writing experience, where you felt you were expected to create on the spot, which just wasn't your style. I mean, you could, when you were on the road or in your youth as a songwriter, just spit them out, boom, boom, boom. But, you know, that was by yourself and only for yourself. And that was a pretty intimidating experience for you the first time you had to co-write, wasn't it?
Well, yes, because I came of age listening to the likes of Lightfoot and Joni Mitchell and Neil Young, Dylan, and they all wrote by themselves. Now, that being said, the Beatles clearly collaborated, and I love the Beatles too. But you know, I was 22, I was cocky, I'd had two gold albums already in Canada, and the idea that someone was telling me I should write with someone else, I took it to be an insult.
Yeah.
Because I was 22 and cocky, and at that age you think you know everything. And so I got together with Barry Mann, and I had this notion that you could only write under, you know, the throes of powerful inspiration. In my case, as I say in the book, it was usually sexual torture someone was putting me through, then I would write. And Barry was just like banging out idea after idea after idea on the piano, expecting me just out of nowhere to come up with these words, and it was just antithetical to anything I'd learned about songwriting. So as a defense, because I couldn't write that way, I didn't have the training at 22, I just said, "Here's a lyric." I didn't want to tell him I'd actually written a whole song called Sometimes When We Touch, because I was afraid he'd think it was a cast-off. So I just pretended I'd written this poem, and I just handed it to him. Went outside the little piano hovel room to call for a cab, and he'd already written the chorus to the lyric by the time I made contact with the cab. And he said, "You got to hear this." And he goes, "Sometimes when we touch..." And he's just playing me this.
Yeah.
It was that fast.
You ask me if I love you, and I choke on my reply. I'd rather hurt you honestly than mislead you with a lie. And who am I to judge you and what you say or do? I'm only just beginning to see the real you. And sometimes when we touch, the honesty's too much, and I have to close my eyes and hide. I wanna hold you till I die, till we both break down and cry. I wanna hold you till the fear in me subsides. Romance and all the strategy leaves me battling with my pride. Through the insecurity, some tenderness survives. I'm just another writer, so trapped within my truth. A hesitant prize fighter, so trapped within my youth. Oh. And sometimes when we touch, the honesty's too much, and I have to close my eyes I wanna hold you till I die, till we both break down and cry. I wanna hold you till the fear in me subsides. At times I'd like to break you and drive you to your knees. At times I'd like to break through and hold you endlessly. At times I understand you, and I know how hard you try. I've watched what love surrounds you, and I've watched love pass you by. At times I think we're drifters, still searching for a friend, a brother or a sister. But then the passion flares again. And sometimes when we touch, the honesty's too much, and I have to close my eyes. And I wanna hold you till I die, till we both break down and cry. I wanna hold you till the fear in me subsides. Oh.
Stuttering in my head, this noise inside takes me, pulls me through the ringer. Then I'm dry, I can't sleep. All I wanna do is go outside. Can't sleep, can't sleep. 40 days and 40 nights, I tossed and turned, can't sleep at night. You leave me restless. I'm waiting for my phone to ring, finalize the shit I'm in. You leave me restless. Time to get these bags up off my.
And you're listening to Indie Can Radio. begins to run cold. I'm on the brink, I'm melting down. I hear the sirens going off.
What is the one word that describes you?
Well, defiance! Yes, yes, yes. Because yeah. I'm defying both the rock world and the opera world. The classical world is what I'm doing. Yeah. Reinvention. Just okay. Like Madonna.
Like Madonna.
Like
or
Lady
David
Gaga.
Bowie
yeah,
or,
that's where I'm going. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. I want to take what I'm doing a lot more into the mainstream.
Right.
I
think we're going to take So are you going to tone it down a little bit or sing a little poppier? Or what are you going to do to make it more widely palatable? Because I like it just the way it is.
Thanks. Well, as you can see from what I do, I don't just give it one color, the voice. I play around with, it, with different voices for the emotion that I sing about. I mean, I'm very, I don't know if you heard tonight, singing, you know, My Beloved is different than doing Defiance, let's say, right, you know? So, no, I will not change too much how I sing, because that's, you know, who I am, but... what's gonna change is the instrumentation and the production value of it. We're gonna be including a lot more orchestral elements
more
in it.
And
more
strings.
Yes, yes. So we wanna really make it a real rock opera experience, like in the true sense of the word. It's not too much of a one or the other, but a perfect, like a more of a balance, so that I think that could have a wider appeal.
I'm trying to picture this maybe performed at Roy Thompson Hall with the Toronto Symphony
We're
Orchestra.
We're thinking theater.
Yeah.
We're thinking theater.
Yeah.
In a theater setting.
Yeah.
We're not thinking club. I want to go big, like bigger.
Yeah.
Because I think this kind of music deserves a big stage and deserves, you know, space and big.
Yep. Is planet Earth ready for you?
I don't know. You tell me. tell me, Joel.
Yeah, well, that's the exciting thing.
Well, they better be ready because it's coming.
Here
that's the future.
Yeah.
That's the future. Really, we've heard pop opera. We've heard all the Il Divo and all of this, you know. And I want to take it up a notch because it deserves to be taken up a notch.
Right,
right now, I'm in a demoing stage with with that first project.
Yeah.
And so I will be doing back-to-back. So it's a lot of work, I have to say.
Yeah.
That's why I I was telling people that this I'm limiting my shows for Toronto.
Yeah.
Just because I want to focus on that, and when I do perform, I wanted to make it a special event. I'm all about events. You know, make it something exciting.
Soul of the hard rock mines, the khaki Dodgers. Many men came from the outports, seeking a new freedom, in search of a solid paycheck, when the fishing couldn't feed them. My grandfather came from Kirkland Lake to play hockey, swift on skates and with his stick. Came some magic tricks that folks would traverse miles to see. Couldn't get much finer than the men in the senior hockey league. Called the Buckens Miners. Could hop the train like my grandmother, though she snuck in past her father, a price that she was willing to pay to see her Buckens Miner play. Go and jump the bullet like my grandmother, though she snuck in past her father, a risk that she would gladly take to watch her Buckens Miner skate. Could buy cigarettes and drink brandy if you worked for a Sarco. The blood-sucking Yankees, it was boom and bust. They had our trust that things would stay the same, but the mines ran out and they had doubt and left as quick as they came. Now they say that you're a ghost town. I never have been haunted. Pass down all your lessons. Reared my father in 59, back when the babies boomed. Folks couldn't have been finer. Spend hours in the orchard rain and watch the Buckens Miners. You could hop the train like my grandmother, though she snuck in past her father, a price that she was willing to pay to see her Buckens Miner play. Go and jump a bullet like my grandmother, she snuck in past her father, a risk that she would gladly take to watch her Buckens Miner skate. She was willing to pay to see her Buckens Miner play. Don't jump the bullet like my grandmother, though she snuck in past her father, a risk that she would gladly take to watch her Buckens Miner skate. We'll be right back.
Reggie Cunningham.
Nigel Cunningham.
Pierce Cunningham.
Collapsbury Cunningham. And this is Indie Can Radio.
Those gents from Toronto, the Cunninghams. Before that, we heard from Patrizia. We heard from, Bozzy Elijic. And, of course, Dan Hill. We'll have some more of that for you next week. And I just actually, at the time of recording, I just saw him live at the Ontario ROM, just telling some stories, had some friends performing with him, and of course, you know, some great, great music. And I can't recommend that book enough. It's, you know, if you're a student of music in Canada, it really talks about the ups and downs of that era of the music industry. I mean, wherever you're in the music business, this is a good read. I Am My Father's Son by Dan Hill, following a legacy of prose writing in the Hill family. Anyway, what are we going to do? Oh, how about East Coast Music Awards coming up? The Danks are going to be there. Let's put them on the radio. Who heard that Gordon Lightfoot died? It didn't actually happen, but it did make the news. He heard from his dentist's office, and he thought he should phone his kids. They might be quite upset. When asked about this false news break, he said, really, it was the best day he had for radio spins. You know, yeah. It's a shame you got to die to get recognized in this country. But this is Sundar, or Sundar, I don't know the man, but this is his version of a Gordon Lightfoot song, The Way I Feel.
Like a tall oak tree, alone and crying, when the birds have flown and the nest is bare. A woman loves heart is like a young bird, and the tall oak tree is a young man's heart. Beneath her boughs you'll find her nesting when the nights are cold. She is warm and dry.
This is Dan Hill, and we're listening to IndyCan Radio.
The strongest man I ever knew, I never was a match for you. Always wanted your attention, never knew just how to get it, so I rebelled. Tried to be your opposite, I did it well. Strange but true, how our lives are like a circle now. I'm very much like you. You were my unsolved mystery, always barely out of reach. At baseball games when parents came, you were always missing. That's okay. Had your meetings and promotions anyway. Somehow I knew
The more I tried to be so different, the more I was like you. Memories die hard. Love dies harder still. I forgive you. I have no choice when all is said and done. I am my father's son. The first time that I saw you cry was the morning that your daddy died. I stood there in amazement as you packed up.
For more information on the artists featured on today's show, visit IndieCan.com.